Authors, are you struggling to get the word out for your books? Discover the latest book marketing and publishing news, tools, and strategies every week. This is the Sell More Books Show. Each show will feature helpful tips and ideas to make your book sales soar. Visit sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and more information. And now your hosts, Jim Kukral and Brian Cohen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 256 of the Sell More Book Show. And listen, you guys are definitely going to want to stick around for this show today. We've got really, really great stories today, especially our number one story, which you guys probably all know what it's all about. And you're going to want to hear the hot takes. But I'm Jim Kukral from Author Marketing Club and Smarter Authors, and joined by Brian Cohen, who is feeling better today from Best Page Forward.
I am feeling better. I'm really happy to be here, too. It was sad that I was unable to be there for last week. But as I just told Jim off the air, I actually had a concussion from a soccer game. So I was not feeling my best, and I have taken it easy, and I'm slowly but surely getting back into the swing of things.
Concussions are scary business, yeah. And I'm glad that you were able to diagnose that and take care, because that could really cause some serious problems for you.
Yeah, I'm lucky it was pretty mild. It wasn't like 10 concussions like we're hearing about in football and whatnot. Just one silly, I try never to head the ball, Jim, for just this reason. I try never to head the ball. And I went with my boyish instincts over my brain there, and my brain did suffer as a result.
Is there any video footage of you getting concussed?
No, and I think it would be kind of boring, because I just didn't even experience symptoms until 24 to 48 hours later. So it would be super boring, and we lost that game, so who even wants footage of that game?
Well, I'm glad you're better, and I'm glad you're here. Thank you to Mark Lefebvre for stepping in for Brian last week. He did an amazing job, as usual, and very happy to have a guest host. And yeah, ready to go for this week, Brian. What's going on with you?
Usual business for us. We've been really working hard. We've had a couple of genre-specific webinars, which has been fun. So very specifically geared towards thriller authors, towards romance authors, and next month we're going to do fantasy authors, where we're pulling some data in with permission from Alex Newton from Klytics. We're getting some really fantastic cover designers to give us info about what designs are currently selling, you know, covering to market. And so we'll have the fantasy one coming up in March, nonfiction in April, and those have just been really great. People have seemed very appreciative of them, because, you know, a lot of these kind of marketing tips and tricks, it's a lot of generic advice and not necessarily, well, what's working in this romance subgenre? And so that's been great. I've learned a lot of things and shared a lot of info. So keep an eye out for the fantasy one in March.
All right. Well, I've got something to announce today.
I know. I'm excited about this.
I'm very excited to announce that the world's first synthetic audiobook is published, and it's by Mark Lefebvre, who published his book called The 7 P's of Publishing Success. And if you don't know what a synthetic audiobook is, that's the fancy term for an audiobook that is read by a computer-narrated voice. Syntheticaudiobook.com is the site that I have been building with my business partner for a long time now. And we give people the ability to create ebooks, turn their books into audiobooks. And the biggest challenge has always been Audible won't allow you to publish anything but human narrated books. And Authors Direct is running a beta with Mark Lefebvre, and you can go to the link. We'll put the link in the show notes, and you can actually download a synthetic audiobook of Mark's book, The 7 P's of Publishing Success, for 99 cents. And I'd be curious to hear what everybody's feedback is. I think it sounds great.
That's so cool, Jim. And I haven't looked at an author's direct page, and it's really sharp. I would have appreciated, just saying, if Brian had a Y instead of an I, Brian being this British male voice. It's so cool that this is going to be a thing. You guys are starting a trend, and please keep everybody up to speed about how well this does, how well this sells, and I can't wait to hear the results.
Yeah, this is really the beginning stages. This is perfect for nonfiction authors. You can do it for fiction, but if you have a nonfiction book and you want to try this out, you definitely want to contact me. Brian's book sounds really great with the British voice. It listens really nicely. And, you know, the ability to create this book in literally days by just choosing a few settings and filling out a form, as opposed to, you know, months or narrating yourself and all of that. So I encourage everyone to go check it out and let me know what you think, or let Mark know what you think, and let the people at Authors Direct at Findaway let you know what you think, because we're going to turn this into something bigger as it goes down the road. So I'm very happy to announce that. So go check it out. Let me know what you think.
You know what you need to do, Jim. You need to get a new romance genre, subgenre started that is robot romance.
And, there you go.
And then sell it using synthetic audiobooks, and it'll be a smash hit.
It might be. You know, I think people will be surprised. If you guys remember, I had Book to Pod, that business, and we're still doing that. But syntheticaudiobook.com is the next venture in our company. So I won't keep going on it. Go check out syntheticaudiobook.com if you want to see some samples.
So cool. Can't wait to hear more.
All right. Well, let's get on with the show.
Yeah. So we do have a winner of the Happy Book Reviews feature. If you comment on our show at sellmorebookshow.com, you have a chance to win this Happy Book Reviews feature. And this week's winner is William O'Day. Congrats, William. Go email Jim at jimcookrell@gmail.com to claim your prize.
All right. Thank you, William. Appreciate that very much. All right. We have three feature patrons today, Brian.
We do. The first one is Gone by Stacey Claflin. One poor decision will haunt her forever. Eager to prove herself grown up, Macy Mercer goes to a dark, secluded park where she's supposed to meet the boy of her dreams she met online. Instead, she finds herself face to face with Chester Woodren, a man capable of murder. If you enjoy page-turning suspense with constant twists and turns, then you'll love this nail-biting read by USA Today bestselling author Stacey Claflin that is Gone. The next book is Inharmonic by A.K.R. Scott. Can music really change the world? Nadja's life was perfectly planned. Marry Luca, learn his trade, have their children. But the night of their betrothal celebration, an accidental murder changes everything. To stay alive, she'll have to become something that defies everything she's been taught to believe. That is Inharmonic. And then Kept in the Dark by R.J. Lewis. Chilling doomsday predictions, demons from another dimension. Is one doctor's delusional patient really meant to save the world? As Jake's stories of flesh-tearing demons turn into shocking physical wounds, the doctor realizes his patient is in real danger. Could shadowy wraiths actually be on the brink of destroying humanity? If you like tormented heroes, dark terrors, and relentless demonic attacks, I love relentless demonic attacks, Jim, then you'll love R.J. Lewis's spine-chilling novel that's Kept in the Dark by R.J. Lewis. So thank you to everyone who has become a patron.
Yes, absolutely. And you can become a patron yourself, as you know. Just go to patreon.com/SMBS. And as a reminder, all of the income that's earned from our patrons goes to produce the show, not into Brian's pocket to pay for his concussion protocol.
One giant kangaroo-like pocket.
You have to pay for your own concussion protocol, Brian. The show is not going to pay.
Yeah, the NFL has been watching me real closely.
All right, let's do last week's question.
All right, last week's question was, would you ever want to write a choose your own ending style book? And in what format would you want to do it? Ian Malcolm said, I'm 99.999% confident I'll never write a choose your own ending sort of book. However, my inner Justin Bieber is screaming never say never. Isabel Peterson said, I have written a choose your own romance book. I plan on releasing it this year. Currently, the book is 175,000 words with 25 endings. I'm going to pare this down to only 8 to 10 endings to avoid reader exhaustion. I also have two other books planned for a series of choose your own romance. That's very cool, Isabel. Jim Heskett says, the logistics of creating a choose your own ending book seems daunting. All those threads. It's hard enough making sure my linear books don't have plot holes. Well, maybe that's the way to fix them, Jim. You just make each plot hole go to a different ending. But great responses there. And Mark did a significantly better job of commenting there than we tend to do. So another hat tip to Mark. You can have your comment potentially featured on the show. You can potentially get a Happy Book Reviews feature if you go over and comment at sellmorebookshow.com. Thank you to everybody who commented.
The best way to fix plot holes is just to do what the new Star Trek movies do. They just say that, you know, you're from an alternative universe. Mm-hmm. So anything that doesn't make sense, they're like, oh, well, that was in the old universe, you know.
Don't you know that was in the old universe?
That was the other alternative universe. We're in a different universe now. So whatever. Brian, would you ever write your choose your own ending book?
I kind of feel the same way as Jim Heskett does. I think it would be a lot of work, and it's really hard to even when you're running a business, if you have a full-time job, to fit in that 60,000, 70,000 word book and to think that maybe writing it choose your own adventure style could increase that by 50%. That would be really tough, but there is a bit of a cool challenge in that. And maybe if after Isabel releases her choose your own romances, if those do well, maybe that'll become the new write to market trend.
I spent a lot of time thinking about this because I went and watched Netflix Bandersnatch after this.
Yeah.
And while I thought it was cool and a novelty, I found it just kind of annoying. And when I was a kid, I read the Dungeons and Dragons Choose Your Own Adventure books. And I loved them when I was 14.
Yeah.
13. But I just feel like it'd be too much work now. Like, I feel like when I watched Bandersnatch, I was just kind of annoyed. It's like, all right, well, what would have happened if I went this way, and now I got to go back and do this? Who's got time for that, you know? So while I think it's a cool concept, I think that the attention span of people today, I think people might just get annoyed with it, and they just want their content just delivered to them. That's my opinion, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the people who might like it the most are maybe those whale readers who consume a lot of books, and to be able to read the same book multiple times could make them feel like they're getting more value.
Right. So, all right. We have some tips. You want to do the tips, Brian?
I would love to do the tips.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, brought to you by Jazzy Jim Cookwell and the bad man, Brian Cohen, it's the tip of the week.
Tip number one, talk it out. Dictating her books has made her healthier, more productive, and brought on more creativity, says prolific author Joanna Penn in a video on her blog. After suffering from her previous writing tactics, Penn says that dictation can future-proof your author career by increasing productivity and creativity, which encourages her to continue. With practice and consistency, Joanna says she can now write up to 5,000 words per hour. That's tip one. Tip two, where's the disconnect? Know what you'll write before you sit down, then turn off your Wi-Fi and put your phone on airplane mode. You're welcome, says author Lindsay Broker on her Twitter account. In what might be the shortest but best writing tip so far this year, the prolific author lays out a solid plan for those of us who struggle to stop watching cat videos when we should be writing. Now, if she would just stop posting dragon pictures to lure us back online. That's tip two. Tip three, author HQ. Social media is an always shifting sand, so it's increasingly more important to have a solid home base that you control for your readers, according to David Gogren. Any website should have basic info, links to where your books are on sale, and most importantly, an effective way of collecting reader email addresses. All of your scattered presences around the web should point back to this author headquarters. Gogren recommends the GoCreate.me solution, which has free versions and a cost-effective upgrade solution. So, we have Talk It Out. Where's the disconnect? And author HQ. Jim, what are you thinking?
All common sense tips that make a heck of a lot of sense. I've always been a big believer in the home base rule. I've been preaching and teaching that for 15 plus years. I always tell people to have your home base, your website, where people can always go. And I always called it claim your digital land. So when the West was being fought for, and they would allow people to go out and ride a horse out and claim a piece of land. And you need to do the same thing online. You need to get that domain name, get that space online where everything is your home court and everything's there and people find you in that one spot, whether that's just an author page, like he said, with Go Create Me or whatever. You got to have that place. Now, it may not be the most visited place that people are going to go to. It probably won't be. You're probably going to get more visits on your Facebook page, your Instagram, or whatever, but you need to have that base where people can go to when they do a search. So that's really important.
And it doesn't need to be complicated. As David is saying here, it just has a few key things. Links, info about you, so maybe a bio, and somewhere to collect email addresses. It does not need to be this 9,000 page bells and whistles kind of website. It just needs to be pretty basic.
If somebody goes and says, well, I really love that author, Spider McGee, who we haven't heard from in a long time, I'm getting worried. They're going to go to Google or they're going to ask their phone for, hey, tell me about Spider McGee, or they're going to search for Spider McGee. And you want that to be the first thing that people find. Now, inevitably, it's going to be your website and probably a Twitter profile and a Facebook or whatever, but you don't want somebody else's stuff to show up. So if you have a common name with like a celebrity or an astronaut or somebody that gets Googled a lot, it's difficult. So you have to, you have to brand yourself in a way that people can find you easily. It's very important.
Yeah. Absolutely. I absolutely agree. And I think that it's just one of those things. It takes some time. You get it up and then you're done with it. Jim, do you like Lindsay's tip here? Have you put this into practice?
Lindsay's tip about shutting stuff down. Yeah. I mean, the way I do that is I go to coffee shop with a laptop and I don't have Facebook or any of that stuff going on. You know, we've covered this a million times. Shut out the distractions. You'll write more. I mean.
Agreed. Agreed. When are you going to try dictation, Jim?
I don't talk. I write like I talk, but I do that through my fingers. And trying to do it in voice mode is difficult. However, I'm very good at giving speeches and I'm good in front of a crowd. So I wonder if I should just try and just get stuff written down that way. I really do need to try it.
The way I've always heard it referred to is it's kind of like you're retraining your brain a little bit. So there's a period during which you feel like it's not worth it because you could just be writing it. But once you get beyond that point, then it becomes kind of like Joanna saying, she's gotten better at it. Over time, it becomes like second nature, just like you're typing it.
Yeah, just like anything. Practice, I would suggest, look, try it. You never know. Maybe you're going to crank out 10,000 words. Maybe you crank out 20,000 words a day. You don't know until you try.
Yes, true.
All right. Well, we have five amazing stories to do today. Brian, would you like to do them?
I would absolutely like to do them.
Here we go.
It's time for the Sell More Book Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
Nobody's forcing you. Book launch expert Tim Grawl says not all authors need to be bloggers, but if they are going to blog, they need to have a plan and give it time to work, according to the Book Launch Show. Grawl says that authors should consider what their specific genre readers want and where they like to get it before choosing exactly where to put it. If a blog is the best place, then by all means blog. But other options like YouTube and Instagram might be better for some. Grawl said, quote, "Whenever I create a new piece of content, I think about where it sits in my overall plans, in what I'm trying to accomplish, and I think about how I'm going to get people to see it," end quote. The author reminds us that it's important to be consistent and give the channels you do choose a chance to work rather than changing direction before the evidence is even in. Great advice from Tim Grawl here. I find that in the nonfiction world especially, it seems like a lot of influencers or wannabe influencers are kind of all over the board on this. They see, oh, some people are successful on YouTube, I'll do YouTube. Some people are successful on this, I'll do this. And then I see some authors try to do this. They say, oh, I'm going to start the podcast on this. But maybe podcasting wasn't the right way to reach those fiction readers. Jim, what did you take from this?
Well, look, I created my first blog 3 months before 9/11. So it's 18 years.
Yeah.
Approximately. So I've been blogging a long time. But before that, before they even had Blogger, I was creating content and I was blogging. I think blogs are absolutely on their way out. I don't believe that the attention span of people have it any longer, who are willing to go to a page consistently and read a long form blog post. I think they will always still exist. But if I was recommending somebody do something to try and, you know, do outbound and put content out there, I would absolutely tell people that YouTube, Instagram, and podcasting would be better places to go. Now, how do you tell a person that writes contemporary romance to do YouTube or Instagram or podcasting? You know, that's a more difficult conversation and ideas have to come. But all you got to do is look at the future and see where all the eyeballs are going and the listens are going. They're going to podcasts, they're going to YouTube, and they're going to places like Instagram. And especially younger audiences, younger people aren't going to be on Facebook in 10 years. They're not on there now, and they're not adopting Facebook. So YouTube and podcasting are really the two biggest ones I think people should focus on.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that those are particularly helpful if you're trying to build an influencer brand. But if you are a romance author, I mean, or a thriller author, I don't know too many authors who've had success on these mediums finding readers. So maybe look to see, kind of like as Tim suggests here, first you need to consider what your specific genre readers want and where they like to get it. If every reader in your genre seems to like Facebook groups where the author does Facebook lives on those groups, then maybe that's where you start. Don't just dive into an Instagram or a YouTube or a podcast until you have done step one. Jim, a lot of people forget step ones. And the step one here is, what do your readers want? And there are ways to research that. So I hope people don't forget step one.
Well, everybody's looking for a formula. The formula in the past was create a blog, write a blog post every day, write every week, And what has been proven over time, and we've talked about many times, is consistency is fine for SEO rankings as they used to exist. But what people really want are unicorn pieces of content. So my friend Andrew Davis, who's a professional speaker, he does, he used to blog. He doesn't blog anymore. He creates one signature video every single Friday and releases it every Friday. And it's between 5 to 7 minutes. And it's amazing. And it's a unicorn piece of content that I watch every week. And I hit the subscribe button on his YouTube channel. And I can't wait to see it every week. That is way more effective than, oh, let me find some stuff to blog about. Or let me come up with the top 10 reasons you should read romance, contemporary romance. I mean, that kind of stuff is outdated and people don't want it any longer. So when you create, pick a channel, it's a podcast, a YouTube, whatever, and come up with a piece of unicorn level content that you can deliver consistently that's high quality every single week or every single day. You're doing this, Brian, with your RAD podcast, the Relentless Authors Advertise, but you're, every day you post in your Selling for Authors Facebook group about your results. And yeah. I consider that unicorn consistent content because every day I read it and I go, oh, look, Brian got a 50% ROI today and he got a minus 10 the next day. And I find that interesting and helpful.
Oh, good. And that's the goal. I mean, that's, of course, the big thing is trying to find something you like and find where it meets what readers want. And I found that, man, a lot of people really like income reports.
Yes.
And so what if I did an income report every single day? And I think on my last post, I multiple people said, keep the post coming. And so, I think I just posted number 51 today. And so I've been doing it 51 days in a row and it's been great. And I think I've reached a lot of people and people are talking about it. So, but if I were trying to reach, my superhero readers, I wouldn't do the same thing because I don't think that that's what they want. They don't want a daily report on something. Maybe they want daily news about the Avengers, but they don't want, they're not looking for this. And so you just have to remember putting first things first.
Yeah, pick one of them and work on it. All right, you ready for number four?
Let's do it.
Number four.
Baby steps to epic success. By applying book covers that pop and learning her craft, Caitlin Bellamy has pulled in over $400 a month in the first 6 months of her author career. According to the 20 Books to 50K Facebook group and a story shared with the show. When the young adult epic fantasy author was faced with fewer hours at work, she had a choice. Find a second job or replace that money with her writing. While Bellamy has just 2 books in her fantasy series, she has already replaced the lost income with author earnings. She attributes her sales success to covers that pop and stand out against other books in the genre, but she says her revenue comes from studying hard as a writer every year. Most of my royalties come from Kindle Unlimited, says Bellamy, because people do finish reading once they start, end quote. She never stops networking at events and on social media and advises new authors to write something they are passionate about. If you don't care about the story you're telling, she says, how can you expect anyone else to? So I really appreciate that Caitlin shared this with us. And as we've said, we reach out to everybody to make sure we have permission first. And I love that this wasn't just, hey, I had this $200 month. I had this $400 month. She's averaging a really strong number, 400 plus per month over the course of 6 months, which is exactly what she needed to pull in when she lost those hours at work. So she said, I'm going to be missing $400. What do I have to do? And she figured better covers. She figured getting better at her craft, writing better books. And she has made it work. It's pretty awesome how, you know, what is it? when you're struggling, when you're in deep crap, the greatest ideas tend to come. I think there's a phrase for that, but maybe post-concussion brain Brian can't figure it out. What do you think, Jim?
So I'm putting together my speech that I've been doing called Unskippable, and I ran across some stats that are applicable to this. So Microsoft did an attention span study, and it basically came down to, they said the average attention span now is 8 seconds. But binge watching Netflix and long form podcasts are up. And then the question is, if the attention span is so low and it's so hard to get people to pay attention to stuff, why are long form content and why are page reads up and why are, like she said, people are finishing the book? Why is that up? It's because we've become extremely selective of the content we give our limited time to consuming. So the conclusion is, we're only willing to spend about 8 seconds figuring out what we like, but we'll spend much longer with content we actually like. So if you look at a story like this and you see that she says she's pulling in $400 a month in the first 6 months because, what did she say? Her covers were popping, right? That was the big reason she gave.
Covers are popping and her writing is strong.
And the writing's okay, that's a given. The writing's got to be strong. But we are really moving into a scary time when people are more distracted than ever. You know, we have that 8 second attention span. Covers, descriptions, that stuff is becoming even more important in a sea of millions of pieces of content. So we really have to think about how we're going to get people's attention and keep it long term. Now, once you get them in, if you have great content, they'll stick around. So this is really important for people to think about moving forward. And this goes right along the lines of what I talk about in my speeches.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And thanks for sharing that info, the 8 seconds. That's really scary. And that's one of the reasons why when we're teaching book descriptions, we really emphasize that that first hook needs to be really strong, because if you only have about 8 seconds to get them to at least vaguely like you, then you really need to knock it out of the park right away.
By the way, I had a conversation with an author this week, Brian, who has like a series of 7 or 8 books.
Oh, I think this person messaged me. Yes.
Good, because I told him to, because he did a reader poll and he asked what was the determining factor of why you chose my book. And the vast majority of his results came back, said the book description. And
this was 8,000 readers he surveyed?
Oh, I don't know how many readers
it was. I think he said something around there, yeah.
So I told him to contact you because you could use that statistics, because that's how important this is.
Yeah. You
have a limited amount of time to get someone's attention. And this small thumbnail world that we're living in here. Here's another stat for you. 77% of people say, when nothing is occupying my attention, the first thing I do is pick up my phone.
Mm-hmm.
That's the world that we're living in right now. You know, if there's nothing going on, if you're sitting there waiting for the doctor to call your name for your appointment, or even if you're standing in line at Chipotle and you know what you want, what are you doing? You're looking at your phone. So how are people making that determination to buy your book in that example, in that split second of less than 8 seconds that you have to pay attention, that you have to grab their attention? It's a very difficult premise in today's fast-paced world.
It's true. It's true. I mean, you really need to make your stuff unskippable or something.
Exactly, Brian. Thank you for the plug.
Anytime.
By the way, I'm booking gigs now, so anybody needs me for a speaker, let me know. All right, you ready for number 3?
Yeah, let's do it.
Number 3.
Avatar, The Way of Writer. Authors often forget to write books to very specific readers, according to Amy Collins in a post on The Book Designer. Collins says that writers have a tendency to write to themselves or to a group they think are their target readers. But if, in an example she provided, the average age of a romance reader is 30 to 50 years old, and the most highly represented geographic area for buyers is the South, then writing romance for women just like you might not work if you're 61 and live in New England. Collins does an exercise where she makes up info about a target 61-year-old romance writer, speculates where she lives, what her education is, what she reads, etc. She calls this person Angela and says, quote, "By writing specifically to Angela and knowing exactly who she is, this blog is going to reach thousands of people with a very strong focus and will reach out to all the Angelas of the world who need this advice. If I did not have Angela in mind while writing this blog, my advice would wander off in any one of a number of directions. But with a reader firmly in mind, I stay on task and on message," end quote. Collins recommends getting the stats on your genre, building a specific person in mind you'll write to, writing your book, figuring out where the person you're writing to buys books, and then going to where that customer avatar is to offer your book. She closes by saying, quote, "The more specific you get and the more you know about this person, the easier it will be to find them when you start selling your book," end quote. Jim, I almost feel like this is tying into the know who you're connecting with theme a bit. But I thought that this exercise that Amy did on the blog was really helpful, and I think it was a thing that a lot of authors just haven't ever considered before.
I think it's smart to add a pseudonym or a name to the person, because then that humanifies it. I know that's not a word.
I like humanifies.
It humanifies it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a smart thing. You know, look, in the other part of the talk I do, I talk about attraction of customers. And, you know, what is marketing's main mission? It's to attract customers. But really, the better answer is marketing's main mission is to purposely attract lifetime customers. So when you add the word purposely into the equation, that's when you break down purposely trying to find people who are the target customers who you want to buy from you for life. So that's a good exercise by adding that person's name and identifying exactly who it is you're targeting. And I agree with her. I think most people just seem to think that they think who their target audience is. They don't really know. So if you have the ability to take polls, if you have a Facebook group, if you have an email list, those are things you should be doing, because you may find out something that you don't know. When I did a poll for Author Marketing Club years ago, I found out that the vast majority of people who were buying were, you know, 50 and up. You know, people, that's who was joining the club. It wasn't younger people who were, you know, just more dedicated to go out and figuring it out on their own. It was people who just really wanted the assistance and the guidance. So
did you think it was going to be different from that?
I thought it would. I didn't think it would be as older. I didn't. I really didn't. So, you know, I actually redesigned the website with bigger type. You know, I made graphic design and UX choices to make it more navigatable to people. You know, I made conscious decisions to purposely attract those types of people. So I think that's very sage advice.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you, I mean, Amy goes into even more depth than we were able to cover here. Go check it out over at The Book Designer. We always have the links in the show notes, except that one episode. We didn't have it for a few days because my go-to person was out of town. But this is one of those, you hear it, you say, oh, that's interesting, but seriously, go do this exercise. I was just getting off the call on a very high-end mastermind that I'm a part of, and this was advice that was shared on that call as well. And so having that target person in mind, who you're definitely targeting, who you're definitely not targeting, please go do that.
I do that before I go on stage as well. I think about, try to get a pulse of who the audience is from the event coordinator. And so I can tailor, you know, specific content and comments to people in the audience. The other day I did a talk to a group of startups. And so I really kind of just hedged everything to those people in the room. It's very smart to know who your audience is. All right. Number two.
Number two.
Western Ho. By finally putting his writing first, Western author Paul Park went from $47 in all of 2018 to earning over $1,100 in just 6 weeks, according to a post in the 20 Books of 50K Facebook group and a story shared with the show. After publishing Westerns under a pen name since 2016, it wasn't until Park visited the 20 Books Vegas conference that he found the gumption to take his career to the next level. Park rewrote his book descriptions using what he learned in my book, How to Write a Sizzling Synopsis, created new covers with better branding, published 3 more books, and created a short story just for his email subscribers. This allowed him to go from 2 figures in all of 2018 to 4 figures by mid-February. Asked what advice he'd give to someone even newer at this game, Park said that once you get some books published, create a few ad campaigns, start small, and ramp up as you see success. It's also important to put the writing first, Park said. After reading The One Thing by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan, I now write first and only after I finish my words do I market and work on the other publishing tasks. Above all else, find a way to attend a conference. He says, surrounding myself with fellow authors finally gave me the motivation to take my career to the next level. We love conferences. That's why we do one. And we find that they can be very motivating. So it's awesome that Paul here found such great motivation from the 20 Books conference. That's a big percentage jump. I've had a lot of percentages in my head with this daily ad challenge, Jim, and $47 to $1,100 is a huge jump. So hats off to Paul Park. What did you pull out of this one?
Well, obviously, I'm a firm believer that getting out of your comfort zone of your office or coffee shop or whatever and meeting other people is one of the best things I've ever done in my career. Just making friendships, building partnerships. And when you get out of the house, that'll be some of the best money you ever spend. Yeah. Our show in May is sold out, so I would love for you to come, but we don't have any more tickets. But if there is a publishing show near you, definitely get out there, because I think for the $1,000 you'll spend traveling and going to the conference or whatever, you're going to get back that times 30, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have certainly found that. I have certainly, I mean, I, to tell you a little story, I first met one of my mentors, Pat Flynn, at the Podcast Movement Conference in 2016, I think. And it was in Chicago. I went with Jay Thorne, actually, and embarrassed Jay in front of Pat, of course. And I actually decided, I got up early and wrote a book description for Pat. And I went there, gave him the book description, and made that connection. And 2 years later, I was applying for this high-end mastermind that he was putting together. And because I had made the effort, because I'd reached out to him, and when I applied to this mastermind, out of over 100, maybe over 200 people who tried to get these 15 slots, I was able to get in. And in part, it's because I spent money to go to this conference. I made connection with a major influencer, and now I have gotten kind of a lot of his wisdom because I made all that effort. So I hopefully that illustrates something.
Yeah, that's really good stuff. Brian, we got to move to the biggest story of the week. Are you ready for this?
I don't know, but I'm going to push through anyway.
Here we go.
And now the number one top five news item.
Or she can't win. The internet is on fire with accusations of copyright infringement, according to a post on historical romance author Courtney Milan's blog, Pajiba, Nora Roberts' blog, and Caffeinated Faye's Twitter account. After being alerted by a fan, Courtney Milan produced dozens of scene-by-scene comparisons of her book, The Duchess War, alongside Christiane Tsuruya's Royal Love. certain sentences appeared nearly identical between the two books. In an angry and passionate blog post, Milan talked about the painful experience of having her heartfelt work stolen. Quote, I wrote The Duchess War in the midst of a massive depressive spell, and I bled for every word that I put on the page. It was a hard book to write, and it's not yours to take. For someone to take that emotion and just shove it into this nonsensical BS, it hurts. End quote. In a post on Pajiba, Soroya was allegedly revealed to also be plagiarizing from Cressley Cole, Tessa Dare, and even Nora Roberts, who posted about the situation on her blog. Soroya claimed that her ghostwriter on Fiverr was the one to blame. The ghostwriters claimed Soroya provided the scenes for them. Whoever is to blame, a tweet by Caffeinated Faye found that Soroya has allegedly plagiarized 44 books, 30 authors, 3 articles, 3 websites, 2 recipes, and 1 Wattpad story. And that is as of this morning. Caffeinated Faye has been updating this story each day. I feel like this happened, Jim. This always happens. We record the show, we're up there, we do our thing, and then a big bombshell hits in the middle of the week, and we don't end up getting to cover it until 6 days later. This was a bombshell. Everybody was talking about it. It made mainstream news. Even Nora Roberts herself talked about it on her blog. This is a big story. What have you been seeing about this? What are your thoughts about it?
Well, first of all, let's give the standard Selmore Book Show disclaimer. We don't know anything about this story. We're not involved with any of these authors. We're making no accusations, and we're just giving opinions on what people have written.
Yes.
So don't come after us. We are not giving any legal advice or anything. So that being said, here's what I want to do. I want to take the emotion out of this. And let's break down what happened. The person who initially discovered this wrote a very passionate blog post. This was their first line of action, I think, in not talking to the person first. Their first line of action was to write a very emotional blog post and put that out to the world. So taking the emotion out of it, and I get why she did that, because it hurts, right? Somebody doing that to you. I'm going to ask, taking the emotion out of it, was that the best approach, or was the best approach to get a lawyer or possibly try to contact the person directly? I'm going to ask, what do you think, Brad?
That's a really good question. I definitely feel like when these things are blogged about, they certainly do catch fire, and especially from a very well-liked, popular author like Courtney Milan. We've cited her blog before. And so that definitely, that really does inflame things. It incites things. And I get it too. I've had upsetting things happen to me in the last couple of years in the publishing world, and it definitely is tough not to immediately blog about it or immediately podcast about it.
But
yeah, that is what she did, and I'm not sure it's what I would have done.
By the way, I'm not arguing that she shouldn't have done it. I'm asking the question. So if you woke up tomorrow morning and somebody had a site called Second Page Forward, and it was your website, and they're selling the same services, or they were stealing content from your site and infringing in some way, would your first reaction be, I need to Facebook and blog about this? Or would your first reaction be, can I go out and try to talk to this person? My experience has taught me the better way to go about it is to try and contact the person directly before you get lawyers involved or try to create social outrage. But my emotionally aspect of it says that I would want to target them. So whatever, if this ever happens to you, learn something from this, because we don't know what's going to happen. The only thing we've heard so far is that this person who was accused of this has removed their website and their Facebook page and their Twitter. And have the books been removed yet, Brian, or are they still up there?
I'm not 100% sure. I'm sure a little search can help figure that out. But I think that I believe I read that she was taking down the books, but she's had a lot of books, so I don't know if she ended up taking everything down. Let's see. I'm doing a search. I'm seeing mostly audio, and as we've seen in the past, when a person's account is removed or something like that, you often still see the audio up. And so it is possible that she has taken down, if she, either she's taken down or Amazon has taken down her books.
The second point on this is this person who allegedly copied, plagiarized the work is from Brazil, I think.
I think that's right, yeah.
So legally, I don't think there's anything you can do. You could try and sue somebody in Brazil civilly and see how that goes for you. So let's kind of work through the flow of what to do. So you contact Amazon and you say, Amazon, I've proven that this person is stealing my work. Amazon maybe gets back to you and says, okay, we agree. And they remove that person's work. Right. And then it's all good, I guess. Then what's an unintended consequence of that? Most likely, Amazon creates a tougher filter algorithm, and all of a sudden, more people now start to get notifications from Amazon saying, well, your content is similar to this one. You must be plagiarizing. Is that a potential consequence of this? Absolutely. Does that mean that she shouldn't do that? Absolutely not. But I'm just talking through how this could all play out. We could be doing a story in a month from now where Amazon is sending out hundreds of thousands of notices to people and saying, we don't like how these two sentences in their book sound very much similar, even though it wasn't plagiarized. One of you is stealing from the other person, and therefore we're just going to ban both your books, right? That could happen.
And we've seen similar situations happen before. So yeah, I'm following.
So that's another potential argument of what might happen with this. The other thing to think about here is, at the end of the day, does a reader or the consumer know or even care? Okay, so taking the emotion out of it, and it's wrong, and it's, I personally believe that it's absolutely wrong to do. Does a reader care? Will they ever know? And on top of that, does Amazon really care? Right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of questions here, and I don't have any answers. I just have questions.
That's the easier thing. No, in this case, it does seem like Courtney Milan was alerted by a fan. So that reader did notice. Don't know how many readers who read both of those books made that connection. But I honestly just, it seems like anyone who has plagiarized even one book, and who knows who to believe, the Soroya or the ghostwriters both claim that they weren't the ones who plagiarized, but it seems like because there were so many books that were allegedly plagiarized, 44 books, 30 different authors, even a recipe or two, that's just, that's a lot. And that obviously them getting their account taken down, or them getting, them taking their own books down, that's the least that should be done. And you brought up a good point about her not being in the U.S. It's going to be very hard if Courtney or Nora Roberts or anyone wants to take further action on this, because let's assume before any of this happens, Soroya, whose name I've heard before, was making $10,000 plus per month. I don't think that money is coming back, or that money is going to be taken from her, or that money is going to be awarded to anybody.
Well, if they violated terms of service on Amazon, Amazon could go after
her. Yeah, but then I bring up your question, does Amazon care?
Right.
Is Amazon going to make an effort to recover $1 million?
Right.
And probably not. And if she's earned $1 million or $500,000 or $100,000 from these books, Amazon's probably not going to make the effort. And because she's not in the U.S., it's going to be very difficult for people to come after her.
Here's my last take on this. Is I've said time and time again, if people want to steal stuff from you in today's world, they're going to. For every story we hear about like this, there are times 10,000 happening that we'll never hear about. There are people who wake up every morning and their job and their entire mission in life is to take other people's work, steal it, modify it, massage it, repost it in any place they possibly can in order to make money from it. And that will never change. And it will continue on, and it makes people probably $1 billion a year, you know, combined, from eBay scams to Amazon scams. So am I saying that we shouldn't worry about it? No. Am I saying that what can we do about it? Yeah, we could try and call them out, and we could try to protect ourselves as best as we can. But it is a reality of a content creator, whether you're a musician, an artist, a book writer, whatever. It is the reality of the world that we live in now. And my opinion is that if you can legally do something about it, you should absolutely try and do something. But again, if you plan on letting this derail your entire career because you're so worried about a person who got over on you, then you're going to look back years from now and say, that's probably not the best approach of what I should have done. I should have just tried to get them legally. If I couldn't, then I should have just moved on and wrote more books. Is that fair to say that?
I think, yeah, there's a mourning period with things like this. And if it's happened to you, if it hasn't happened to you, I wouldn't get too worked up over it. I would try not to. If it has happened to you, you might need a couple weeks to really process this. It's a tragic thing to have your work stolen or to have something you care deeply about compromised, but you move on and you get back to business because that's what you've just got to do.
Yeah, it's tough though. I mean, if it had happened to one of us, we would be emotional.
Absolutely.
And I don't blame the authors one bit for reacting the way they did. I don't think they did anything wrong. I'm just asking questions and trying to offer someone who's listening to this, if this does happen to you at some point, maybe a different perspective of how you might want to handle it mentally and an action plan. But we all agree plagiarism is horrible.
Yes.
But it is. We should also agree that it is a fact of life for a content creator.
Mm-hmm. Sad but true. I'm thinking the question of the week would be, if you found out your work was being plagiarized, what steps would you take to deal with the situation?
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear if people would do the same thing as Christiane.
Christiane's the one who is accused. Courtney.
Courtney's do the same thing as Courtney, which is you know, go out and blog and talk about it, or try to resolve it privately first, or what would you do?
You can answer that question of the week at sellmorebookshow.com in the comments section for episode 256.
All right. Well, that was a depth charge we just dropped into the community there. Hopefully everybody gets revved up about that one.
Well, we shall see. Hopefully people are revved in a positive. I'm going to go learn how to dictate like Joanna Penn and churn out some awesome books.
All right. And everybody go to the show notes and get a copy of Mark Lefebvre's The 7 P's to Publishing Success in synthetic audiobook form. It's 99 cents. And I would love your feedback on that. If you want to email me directly, jimcookrell@gmail.com, let me know what you thought about the recording and the book, audiobook, or contact Mark as well. But I would love feedback on that. Thank you so much. All right. Well, let's wrap it up, Brian. I'm Jim. He's Brian. This has been Sell More Book Show. And we'll see you again for another great week of publishing news next time. Have a great week of book selling, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling.